Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Tuesday edition here on Zero Block 30, and today we're going to have six rounds in the magazine. But we're going to start off with a little pre-show chat because I want to get into some things that I saw over the weekend that I found to be incredibly troubling, I will say. It's incredibly troubling. So have you guys ever watched the show The Great on Hulu? Have you ever seen that?
No.
Sure have not.
You've never seen it, Cons?
No.
Oh, you'd love it, Cons.
What is it?
It's like a historical docu-series, kind of like very loosely based on history, on Catherine the Great and Peter the Terrible and from Russia, mm-hmm. where she moves from Germany and marries Peter, and they have like this big to-do. He's like a sex maniac, and she is like this liberal-minded person from Germany where she's trying to influence Russia and what's going on in Russia. So they're at war. The Russians are at war with Sweden. They're getting after it with Sweden, which I want to say, if you're at war with Sweden,
yeah, what are you doing?
You're doing something wrong.
What are you even thinking?
You need to check yourself.
Yeah. If you are battling with Sweden, you're like, what did we do wrong? Where did we go wrong here? So Catherine the Great is this new empress, and she's in Russia, and she decides to go to the front lines where all the war is happening and things like that. Well, wouldn't you know it, she's an empress, so she brings fancy treats to the troops on the front line, which would be lovely. I mean, I imagine back to when we were deployed. If you'd have had like Laura Bush or any like Mrs. Bush or Michelle Obama bringing different treats and shit like that, we would have loved that, right, Kate? You get a fresh Otis Spunkmeyer delivered by Michelle Obama, you're chowing down.
Cookies are ready.
Yeah.
You know, you come back from a firefight, cookies are ready, and, you know, a little apron on, or even anybody. Yeah, anybody doing that.
Cons, describe your thoughts if Laura Bush shows up with a fresh packet of Fig Newtons.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't get too excited about Fig Newtons because those are like whatever, give or take. But if she came with some a nice box of Godiva chocolates, or yes, even freshly baked homemade chocolate chip cookies, I'd do backflips.
Yeah, I mean, you just love a nice little tasty treat. So these people are on the front lines. This is pre-World War I is what we're talking about here. This is a long time ago. I believe it's in the 1700s is whenever this docuseries is kind of placed. So she's there. She's doing stuff. She gets to the front line. She has this big blue box. Her and her aunt-in-law has a big blue box filled with macaroons. They have macaroons that they're bringing to the troops on the front line.
Oh, God. Overrated.
Oh, wow. Well,
macaroons are the worst.
I didn't expect
macaroons
that.
Are the worst, most hyped up dessert of all time.
I think people
they always fucking suck.
People get excited because they're all the different colors and what have you, but they're actually
they're
not that good.
Mm-hmm. They're difficult
they're
to
garbage.
Make, too.
Well, I've never
none
had
of that
a good
makes
macaroon
it,
in my entire
None of that
life.
Makes it good just because
okay,
they're fancy.
So
and
they're
overpriced.
You're on the front lines. It's the 1700s. You're on the front lines in fucking Sweden-Russia war. She goes up to all these people. Some people have their ear halfway blown off. Some people are fucking sitting there with big old holes in their legs. And she's like, would you like a macaroon? One guy got his hand blown straight off of his body. Can't have a macaroon. She places the macaroon, a pistachio macaroon, on his tongue. Mm. He really enjoys it. And he says, that's delightful. But that's not the part that bothered me. The part that bothered me, because they ride up in their carriage and hooting and hollering. They get in their carriage. They go up to the front lines. They get out. Guess who is the first one to eat a macaroon?
She is.
No. It was like the Secretary of Defense, essentially. The guy who leads the army. He's the first one that eats the macaroons. You can't do that.
No.
You can't lead troops and be the first one to have a tasty treat.
Troops eat
the
first.
Bottom feeder has.
Didn't anyone call him out?
No. It's like he goes, he's like, what are these? Macaroons. Takes a big bite of the macaroon. He's like, oh, the troops are going to love these. Fuck out of here, guy. You get the macaroons last.
My issue is that he enjoyed the macaroon. That's my problem. That's just shaky judgment.
You guys don't seem nearly as fired up about this as I was.
Nope, sorry.
All right, that's fair. Today we have six rounds in the magazine. Round number one. Iran has issued an arrest warrant for President Trump for the murder of Qasem Soleimani.
Whammy!
Oh, that is true. I didn't see that coming. An astute observation has led to laughter. We are laughing. And it is continuing. And slowing down a little. But there's still a good spirit.
Yeah,
and
it's slowing.
We got it wrong. It's getting less. There's a little chuckle. And it's done.
You really wreck moments when you do that, Ron.
Round number two. On a lighter note, the U.S. Army's veterinarian program continues to be one of the best in the world. They saved the working dog's life this week, and we're going to let you know how. This story is awesome. I love this story. Round number three. It's nice to have a story that's good in between a sandwich of bad shit. I mean, the next one is,
oh yeah.
I don't think I've ever been tagged on Twitter for an article as much as I did on this one. Like, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts? And I was like, ah, you know what? I'm going to answer it all on Tuesday. We're going to do that today because the New York Times reported that Russians put a bounty on U.S. service members' heads earlier this year. Round number four, with the curve flattening, ending up looking like a hanging slider, we brought in retired Major General Malcolm Frost to teach us how to be motivated again in the face of an eternal pandemic, at least one that seems like it's going to be internal. And round number five, we're going to do a little more CWO goofing. Anytime you can bring a chief foreign officer on the show, you got to do that. He's actually our producer's old, what was he, commander? Well, CIC?
Here's my OIC in Afghanistan.
Yeah, OIC, not CIC. That would be a big promotion for a CW. For a chief foreign officer. All right, and finally, round number six, we're going to do another good old-fashioned chap surprise that I haven't told the folks about, which I really love doing. And today, we have a new sponsor alert. So we got Rocky Boots that they sent us some. Now, Kay, let me ask you, whenever you were in, were you allowed to wear any old boots you wanted to, or did you have to wear specific types?
It was a specific type of boot. Old Kate Stone Valor doesn't remember the exact kind of boot it was, but I know shocker. Like the Army had these wacky moon boots they would wear that we like definitely were not allowed to wear.
Cons, what kind of boots were you allowed to wear?
Oh, we could basically wear anything so long as it was the right color. I had some.
Yeah, I remember Oakley and Converse maybe? Were pretty popular. Yeah, they were sweet. Day. But these ones, I just got a new set from the new sponsor, which is Rocky Boots, and they are awesome. They look great. And for Marines, the biggest thing is for Marines, you have to have the Eagle Global Anchor on the heel. And this does. I was surprised when I pulled it open. I was like, man, this sucks. We're going to have a sponsor that's boots. And I'm going to be telling people to buy the boots. And Marines aren't going to be able to do it. They are because they have a Marine Corps officially approved boots by Rocky Boots. And they're super comfortable. I threw them on. I was actually wearing them while I was doing a little bit of goofing, which was nice because they sent me two pairs. They sent me one with the Eagle Global Anchor, the combat boot. And the other one were just kind of like a work boot. I don't know if you guys fuck with plywood. It's pretty heavy. It's a little 4x8 piece of wood. I was pulling it out by myself, dropped it on the old toe. I had steel toe boots. Boom. Nothing happened at all. My toesies are intact. Safety is paramount when you're dealing with wood. And you might want to do it with Rocky Boots because Rocky Boots built for men and women that serve and protect the country. They're designed and built in the U.S. for each individual military branch. So if you're whatever branch you're in, they have boots for you. Most recently, Rocky side-by-side with the Marine Corps and developed a boot specifically for Marines, brought a USMC Tropical Boot. Do you remember which one that is, Kay?
I do, and I was looking on the site. I remember some of the pairs were, like, hideous. Remember the Danners, how ugly they were? So I looked at these, and I was like, I would wear these all day, every fucking day. They look so good. They really do.
Yeah, because some of the other boots out there look like the old peanut roller skates. Remember those? Like the peanut roller skates that has the orange wheels and shit. They look like that. These don't look like that at all. These are great. They have a nice little comfortable heel so you can drive your heels to the deck whenever you're making your nice little marching cadence whenever you're doing that. So whether you need boots for rucking in the desert, working in the yard, or getting outside this summer for a hike, Rocky has you covered. Now listen up. Normally when we have a little bit of a discount, it's going to be like 10%, maybe 15%. Go to rockyboots.com and the promo code ZBTA at your checkout. You're going to get 25% off your next pair of boots. 25% off. That's a big for boots when you can normally pay like My old boots for uniform were $200, and these are not that much money, and you're going to get 25% off, which is unbelievable. Make sure you go to rockyboots.com and the promo code ZBT at checkout. You're going to enjoy wearing those boots when you're actually back in formation again. Let's get started with the show. How your weekend was, Cons? I know you had a fancy boy weekend up in Newport, Rhode Island. How was that?
Yeah, it was very nice. The weather agreed with us for 2 of the 3 days that I was there. So Thursday and Friday were nice. Saturday, not so much. A lot of rain. I did one of those things, though, where I don't know if I've ever told this on the show before, but I had a guy that I knew a little bit older than me, and he's a friend of mine. And whenever I'd be hanging out with him, if we'd be by a pool or the lake or something, and I was getting ready to do something that was questionable in whether or not it was dangerous or safe, he would always look at me, and I was still in the Army at the time, and he would say to me, Connor, before you do that, just ask yourself, if one of your soldiers was about to do that, what would you say? And honestly, more often than not, I'd be like, you know what? You're right. I would say, like, don't do that. And then I would subsequently not do that. Well, this past Saturday, there was nobody there. This guy, Brian. Brian was not around to say, hey, Connor, what would your soldiers say to you if you were doing that? So there was a bridge, okay? There was a bridge to our hotel, to the island where our hotel was. And the bridge was not anything intimidating. It was probably about, oh, I'd say a 20, 25-foot drop into the water at the highest point. So I said, you know what? Got to jump off that thing. And I did a little backflip-a-rooney off the bridge. And, you know, I'm not so much, I wasn't at all concerned about landing because I have a lot of experience with diving and stuff. But what came to our attention later when our friend Katie did this was the gentleman who was working at the dock screamed at her because he has said that a lot of people were not able to see other boats coming from the other side and they got tangled up in the propellers. And that's not a pretty sight. Yeah, not a pretty sight. So I understand how it could be dangerous. Lo and behold, I get a text from my mother. I saw your little backflip video. Why do you continue to do stupid things? Why do you continue at 35 years old to make me nervous?
You're too old for that shit, Cons.
Well, at any rate, I did that, and it was a nice weekend overall. I you know what's funny with this all this COVID stuff? It used to be so easy, and Kate can expound on this a little bit, especially down the shore. It used to be so easy if you were in the same town as somebody, you'd just say, hey, let's meet at this bar at this time, and it was easy peasy lemon squeezy. So I had Fights, you know, goes up to Newport quite a bit. He's very fond of that town, and he came over to our pool the one day, and then the next day, we were trying to link up, and it was nearly impossible, and we actually ended up not linking up because there was no real easy way because you can't even say, like, hey, let's go meet at a bar because you have to have a reservation. You have to be sitting at a table. Mm. Understandably so, but then that just puts such a wrench in everything. So that was my weekend overall. It was nice. Oh, and finally, I dropped some knowledge on everyone. If you are not already doing this, please subscribe to this tactic. Before you go away for a long weekend, clean your house, clean your apartment, because coming home to a nice place is so much better after a long weekend when you're tired. Maybe some people are a little hungover. The last thing you want to do is come into a mess that you're just like, ugh. So that's all I got.
That was saved rounds at the beginning of the show for Cons. Let's go on to Kate. How was your weekend, Kate?
It was good. I got back from the shore Friday morning, and so I was reunited with my cat Spork again. So that was just a delight. He was rolling around on the carpet. He was scooting all over the place. It was a delight. So, yeah.
Back with his wiggly worm again.
Back with the wiggle worm again. So all good on that front. He survived.
Love it. Pretty calm weekend here. Not much going on. Did a whole day. I started my day at 7:30 at Home Depot. Took me like 2 hours in Home Depot to get all this wood. Loaded it all up in my truck. I didn't come inside until like 5:30 in the afternoon. Just worked all day on my new lovely bookshelf, and it looks great. I'm happy about it. Doing some changes so I can get back in shape. All that stuff is starting soon. Speaking of starting soon, let's get into the actual topics of the day. That's the word.
You know,
I was
what we need
for
to do really quickly though, Chaps. We need what? To do like one of those time lapse videos of your office, because if you go from episode one and what your office looked like to what it looks like now, I think that'd be an interesting change to see.
It is. My wife is actually pretty mad about it because she was like, she came in and I had this huge. I mean, now if you don't see any of the videos of DIY stuff, this is it's 8 feet by 4 feet. So it's very long, made of plywood, super heavy, super sturdy. I put all my stuff on it. I took out an old particle board based bookshelf that I had in before. And she was like, this is like the third or fourth time you've completely redecorated your office since you've had this job at Barstool. And I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. It is. And I enjoy doing it, and I might do it again whenever I get tired of working out. That just might be how things go down. But let's get into the actual topics of the day. We're going to start off with Al Jazeera. This is Al Jazeera news. And the first story, Iran has issued an arrest warrant and asked Interpol for help in detaining U.S. President Donald Trump and dozens of others it believed carried out drone strike that helped kill a top Iranian general in Baghdad. That was, God, that seems like fucking 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, it does.
Qasem Soleimani dying seems like legit 20 years ago. It happened in January. The Tehran prosecutor said on Monday that Trump, along with more than 30 other Iran accused of involvement in the January 3rd attack that killed General Qasem Soleimani, faced murder and terrorism charges, the semi-official ISNA news reported. I don't know what that means, the semi-official. How are you semi-official? Like, you're either official or you're not, right?
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
You can't be a semi-official.
Yeah, it's like you can't get half pregnant.
This is not the Arena Football League where it's like semi-pro. You're either official or you're not.
Do you think that Iran has like a Dog the Bounty Hunter kind of guy? Him and his big to-do wife are going to come rolling into America.
RIP. Don't do it.
Ooh, oh, yeah. That's not nice.
Yeah.
Well, she would have appreciated. She would have reveled in knowing that that's how I think.
No, I think you did it right there. Big titty. That's past tense. That's
yes.
Fine.
But love, much love to her. Rest in peace. Anyways, but do you think they have a Dog the Bounty Hunter couple that's going to come over here and try and bring them over there?
Bring them to justice?
That would be, I would watch, that's must watch TV. Iranian Dog the Bounty Hunter is a much watch TV. So they didn't identify anyone else that was sought other than Trump, but you'd have to imagine it'd be like the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, anybody that's involved in approving those types of operation. But Iran stressed it would continue to pursue prosecution even after President Trump's presidency end. Interpol, based in Lyon, France, did not immediately respond for comment. You have to imagine they're like, can you guys leave this out of us out of this? We don't want to be involved in this shit. He was also quoted as saying that Iran had requested a red notice be put out for Trump and others, and the highest level notice by Interpol requesting that seeks the location and arrest of the individual. His location is the White House. Like, it's not exactly
1600 Pennsylvania Ave.
Yeah, right. He's not exactly hiding in a compound in Islamabad. That's not where he's at. It's just ridiculous. I mean, talk about doing something that is just for show and headline clicks. You gotta know if you're Iran. You can issue as many warrants as you want to. President Trump ain't walking through that fucking door in Tehran.
But still, this tiny little part of me, I've seen Taken enough times to know. He gets done the presidency, he's over in Europe playing golf or something. A van pulls up. They bring him in. I don't know. I'd still be creeped out about him.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to say this beyond a shadow of a doubt. Iran doesn't have any Brian Mills, okay? I think he's okay. I don't think he's too worried. Because also, too, you get Secret Service the rest of your life. So you always got people protecting you. So I think
you'll be
okay. If
there was going to be a president who got kidnapped by Tehran after they issued a warrant for arrest, who do you think would be most likely to go?
It's Jimmy Carter,
it's
for obvious reasons.
Jimmy Carter. He gets in. He's like, we got some Iranian peanuts over here. He's like, Iranian peanuts? Hell, I never had a Iranian peanut. I've been working for Habitat Humanity. I've been working up a storm. Me and Chap's been building a cabinet out front. Let's get in the van. We'll go. I'll go. Yeah, you want to come? You want to come?
I bet you.
HW, you want to come? HW's been dead for a year, sir. You want to come?
I bet you Iran's still pretty perturbed about that whole Iran hostage crisis situation.
Yeah, they're probably pretty pissed off about it still. But I don't think that anything's going to come from that. I don't understand what we do it too. I mean, we issue warrants for people that we know aren't going to come. Like you're not going to get them. Like, what are you doing? Just stop wasting your time. I guess it looks nice. It gets some good engagement. So good for Al Jazeera for getting those retweets and likes in this morning on an article that they released. Having that scoop, that's a big time scoop, though. The president of the United States wanted for murder? Huh. It's not that's like tough. It's the 1700s or the Wild West where President Trump could just mosey out west.
Yeah, no, he's He's very much out there, as they say.
I'm just glad we're not in Hamilton times, where he would have to meet on the front lawn of like Iran's place and do a little duel goofing.
Oh my God, dude. The old-fashioned duel needs to come back. I mean, we need to have that. You have two people that just can't, like Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman, or Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless. Just stop with the arguing. You've been arguing on TV every day, fired up for 10 years. Just do a duel and get it over with.
What if we could do a duel but make it non-lethal?
Oh, with like beanbags, like the beanbag shotguns.
Yes, like something.
Or soap rounds. That'll be good. Oh, Roman candles. You could do Roman candles.
Yes. Kate, have you ever had a Roman candle fight? I feel like that's a guy thing.
That's sexist.
I've lit a couple out of my butt.
What?
But never shot them at anyone?
No, not yet.
Oh, you need to. Roman candles. You if you get the, where's the ideal Roman candle battle take place, Cons?
Gosh.
There is a correct answer.
Wow. I don't know where.
No, you got to have a guess. Come on.
High school parking lot.
Close.
Christ.
Gym. Mm.
Nope. Mm.
Playground.
I know. I'm trying to think what he's thinking of here. And it's very, very tough to get inside Chaps' brain because it's so incredibly weird. Your mom's basement.
Nope. The correct answer was tennis court. Tennis court is the perfect place for a Roman candle duel. Let's move on to round number two. This one actually makes me happy, and it comes to us courtesy of Stars and Stripes. Sal, do you guys know how many times a dog can receive a blood transfusion?
I don't even know how many times a human can.
I'm going to say a blood transfusion for a dog is good for one time and one time only.
The one time thing. Well, it could be a two time thing because dogs have like almost 300, I believe, 284 different types of blood type, where the human only has, I think, six different types of blood, where a dog can have almost 300. So this Air Force dog, he suffered a heat injury in Saudi Arabia needing a blood transfusion. He got from a Navy dog named Army. So it's a Navy dog named Army. How cute
I love that irony.
I love that too.
I think Army is a fantastic name for a dog too.
It's
perfect because I've told you guys what the qualifications for a good dog name is, right? You have to be able to say it really high pitched.
Yes.
Army.
Yeah. So
Army, come here, Papa. It's Army.
Yeah. You basically have to talk to them like Elmo when they love it like that. So this dog having a heat injury. This can't be right. Like I read certain things and I see all the time on Twitter, fake news. 120-pound Belgian Malinois, no shot.
That seems big for a Belgian Malinois.
No shot. A German Shepherd weighing 120 pounds would be odd. A Czechoslovakian Shepherd, maybe. A Belgian Malinois, they're normally like 60 pounds. There's no way.
I didn't know we were fat shaming Belgian Malinois today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are, because I think it comes down to how quick they could be. It's kind of like, Chaps, if you'll stay with me on this analogy, I think 120-pound Belgian Malinois as a working dog, that'd be like a right tackle playing Belgium, being a working dog, right? Where you need like a DB
maybe, to be a working dog. Maybe this dog is big boned. Maybe this dog has a thyroid problem and it's just growing real quick. You don't know this dog.
Got all kinds of problems. 120-pound Belgian Malinois is not normal. He was rushed by helicopter to Prince Sultan Air Base to Kuwait's camp in Kuwait earlier this month after his body temperature reached 110 degrees. Now that's probably because he's a fat shit. Like, I didn't even realize when I read this first that it was 120 pounds. This makes sense. So the normal body temperature for a dog before they start going to heat stroke is about 106. 108, their brain legitimately starts to melt, like where you have real, real issues for a working dog. So this guy got all the way up to 110 degrees. He did not seem like himself, said his handler. No shit.
Yeah.
In a statement that was released a few days after the incident. We rushed him right to the medical tent. In recent years, a rash of heat rash among troops, some fatal, have plagued the military, which saw its first decline in such cases in 5 years. Still, more than 2,000 troops suffered heat exhaustion. Don't know what that has to do with the working dogs, but they said they're very lucky that his was caught quickly and treatment was given right away. People don't give enough credit to the veterinary medicine that the Army has. It is the best veterinary medicine in the world, period. Like the The facility they have here in San Antonio rivals any hospital for humans in the world. Like, they can figure out fucking anything with these dogs. And it's incredible. Like, whenever they come here and they do their internship here, and then they go out to the rest of the fleet and they take over, like, at an air base in Saudi Arabia or something like that, or in Kuwait. They know so much more than the average vet. Because think about it. If you're going to be a vet that specializes in these types of dogs, what better place to learn than a place that has fucking 3,000 of them roaming around?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like if I was in San Antonio and I got into, like, a car, a scooter, that I'd be in a scooter accident in San Antonio, I would be like, please take me to the dog hospital. I would have to go there instead.
And if you were having a bad day, I remember having a couple bad days whenever I was working at Lackland, and they have a room just called the puppy program, where they raise these little Malinois, these little Maligators, and there you could walk into the little puppy program room, and there could be 40 Belgian Malinois puppies roaming around. I would go in there in camis, staff sergeant of Marines, lay down in the middle of the floor, and just let the puppies go. And there would be like 8 to 10 week old Malinois just like covering you like a blanket, licking on you, biting on you, just hanging out. It was the best, man.
I believe that. You know, it'd be an awesome life. You're a Belgian Malinois. You're super. You got all this energy, whatever. You become a military working dog. You love your handler. You get to go on all these adventures. You're fucking loving it. You get retired, and now you become a stud. Now all you have to do is make new ones for the. So you're retired, you're getting your, I'm sure they get excellent pay. And he's just.
Dude, you're exactly right. There was this bigger Malinois, and he was kept as the stud. He was like 70 pounds, and he was the stud. Huge and he was ripped, dude. He looked like fucking, who's that guy? Terry Tate, the office linebacker.
Yeah.
He looked like the military working version dog of Terry Tate, where he's just like, ripped. And you would go in and be like, man, that dude just does nothing but fuck all day. That's all he does.
Well, you can understand why. He walks around the beach looking like that. I get it. Chaps, I have a question. Mm-hmm. When you have a military working dog like this situation what we're talking about here, where it's extremely heavy, is it okay to also shame the handler?
Oh, yeah. It's the handler's fault. The handler's overfeeding. You can blame some of it on the vet, because the vet is the one who actually gives you how much you should be feeding the dog. But they add lazy handlers. They should not allow that to happen. 110 pounds. Unbelievable. You can't get that fat if you are a Belgian Malinois.
When the dog overheated, the handler and the dog were both in a tent just rat fucking all the MREs together.
Just hanging out. I mean, I'd feel embarrassed if it, and you got to shame them. I was telling my family, we were watching this video of this dog that was trained to do stuff, and it reminded me of Psyche, of some of the tricks that I used to teach Psyche to do. Like, one of them was obviously bang, like you're dead, and where he acts like he gets shot, and he would roll over, and then he would put his feet in the air and be like, no, you're really dead. And then his tongue would fall out of his mouth. So we would do that one. And then if he would mess up, I would make him push. Like, I'd be like, okay, down, up. Down up.
One, down up. One,
that's
one,
so great.
One.
Awesome.
And I would also, my favorite trick though, because I used to be a motivator, I would draw a line in the sand wherever we were, and I would tell Saka, get on line, bitch. And he would like come and like put his feet like right on the line and be like, all right, I'm ready. It's cute.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk about something real bad. There, round number three. comes from the Washington Post. I try to set it up in between bad stories and good stories. We're
like
doing little ebbs and flow.
This is like a macaroon of stories. You got the gross, weird breading on the outside. That story with the dog was the only good part, the middle. All right.
Yeah. All right. So now we're going to get into some more of the dry, flaky crust of the story. This comes to us from the Washington Post and the New York Times and basically every other media outlet in the world. Russian bounties offered to Taliban-linked militants to kill coalition forces in Afghanistan are believed to have resulted in the deaths of several U.S. service members, according to intelligence gleaned from the U.S. military interrogations of captured militants in recent months. Several people familiar with the matter said it was unclear exactly how many American or coalition troops from other country may have been killed or targeted under the program. U.S. forces in Afghanistan suffered a total of 10 deaths from the hostile gunfire or improvised bombs in 2018 and 16 in 2019. Two have been killed this year. In each of those years, several service members were also killed by what is known as green-on-green or green-on-blue hostile incidents by members of Afghanistan security forces, which are sometimes to believe have been infiltrated by the Taliban. The intelligence passed from U.S. Special Operations Forces based in Afghanistan led to a restricted high-level White House meeting in late March. So they're saying that this meeting actually happened at the White House. The meeting led to broader discussions about possible responses to Russian action, ranging from diplomatic expressions of disapproval and warnings to sanctions, all kinds of shit. Basically, if you have this kind of thing, everything's on the table. You come in there, you have a whole kit and caboodle of things that you can offer to the president or you can offer to the DOD. These are the type of actions. If you've ever seen The West Wing, I think that's a perfect illustration of what actually goes down, where you have all these different officers, all these different military members, these advisors that are sitting around the Situation Room, and they say, what can we do here? What are our options on the table? Well, we have this option. We have that option. We have this option. Wouldn't you think so, Cons?
Yes, I think that's a prime example of what would happen. And that just goes back to thinking about what it comes down to ultimately make that decision, to take all those options and then be the one that has to make the decision, even based on all this great intelligence and all these smart people and all these great leaders informing you, then you have to make that decision. It's so tough.
Wait, am I understanding this right? That so Russia was basically saying, hey, if you kill Americans, we'll pay you kind of thing? Is that what?
Yes.
And so this is making me think of this never-ending cycle in Afghanistan, where when Afghanistan had invaded, or when Russia had invaded Afghanistan, and we were taking back channels to fund the Mujahideen and all these other groups to take them out, and now it's like the reverse, where now they're funding the bad guys there to take us out, and it's like, when is this gonna, what the fuck? But also, fuck Russia, wholeheartedly.
Right, fuck Russia, big time. Yeah. Because the intelligence that came out, the CIA was tasked with reviewing everything. The administration's special envoy for Afghanistan, he's been in the news a lot. He's the one that's involved with the negotiations with the Taliban and how we're going to withdraw and what we're going to give up for the Taliban, what they're going to give up with Afghanistan, and on and on and on. He said that he preferred confronting the Russians directly about the matter, while some of the National Security Council officials in charge of Russia were more dismissive of taking immediate action. Now, to me, if Russia is legitimately hiring people to kill Americans, that's not something. I'm not like a confrontational guy in my marriage. Like, I let a lot of things go, like where I don't want to get into an argument, where most likely if it's not going to be a big deal tomorrow, it's not a big deal today type of situation. This is one you got to bring up. If you're trying to hire people to kill us, you got to be direct about that one.
Yeah, you got to figure out if it's legit or not, for sure. That's not something you just brush off and say, like, oh, yeah, no, that's not true. You got to really investigate and find out what the hell is going on, because if this is happening, it's a very big problem.
And it probably hasn't just been happening for a couple years now. It's probably been a long time thing. And if I was family of a service member that has been killed, I want the U.S. to fucking do something. I don't know. Get online, bitch. Do something like that. But yeah, so I don't know.
And this is far from the first time that something like this happened. When we were in Iraq and Afghanistan, there was different bounties that were constantly placed on special operators and dog handlers. It's just the nature of the beast. When you're at war in somebody else's territory, there is going to be bounties on your head. Now, you don't expect it to come from somebody who, I guess technically, because if they're going to be a part of the G8 again, would be considered an ally. You don't want that coming from an ally, but having bounties on your head as a service member deployed is not something that's strange. I mean, that we knew for a fact that we, like, dog handlers were briefed before you go out. Snipers are told they will get more money if they kill you because you are a force multiplier.
Like, and saying this, if you take
the
out
bombs and shit,
if you take out an officer, that's why they would tell them, don't go outside the wire with your M9. They know that you're an officer.
That's why they started littering people with more, with more pistols and things like that, because it traditionally had just been officers that would carry pistols.
Yeah.
So they started to give pistols to more people, which made people more of a target, I guess, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense looking back. This story has blown up a lot, but when I first heard about it, it is obviously bad on its face, but it's not surprising. Like, whenever you're at war in another country, people are trying to kill you. Like, that's part of the game. Like, it really is.
That's, as they say, how it works.
But this is just a whole different ball of wax, though.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. But you have to, you can't just be like, oh, well, it's part of it. You got to do something to mitigate that. And if you're not one of these fucking things, like the president and the vice president, and now the chief of staff being like, well, Lance Corporal don't know. That doesn't work when you're the commander in chief. Specialists don't know. Lance Corporal don't know. Seamen don't know. Don't work when you're the commander in chief. If you didn't know, and this was a high level conversation that was happening at the White House with multiple levels of the CIA and NSA, and you didn't know that it was happening, why the fuck not? That's a pretty important question to ask.
Exactly.
Why are they keeping this from you? Who makes that decision? Because Cons, as an officer, as a commander, your responsibility sometimes is to keep things from higher command, right? Like you don't brief everything up. But correct. If there's something that should have gone up and you don't, you are fucked.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. And then on the other end of that, if someone above you asks you a question about something you should know and you're in the dark, there's no worse feeling than not knowing something you're supposed to know.
Well, why that's the fuck so don't worse. You know?
Well, there was these bounties. And
Sure, you tell the higher ups, but you also are taught to sanitize and put a bow on everything you tell the higher ups so they feel like they're crushing it and doing a great job. So, President Trump, we're having a little rush of goofing right now. Don't worry about it. Maybe that was
the extent. We all got it under control. They buzzed the tower a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you also, though, too, like with all this stuff, I'm always just like, there's part of me that says there's always, I'd say 25% of everything that we just don't know. And it's just not being told, and there's no way the news is ever going to find out about it. So we'll never know about it one way or another.
Yeah. I just wish we had better answers than we weren't briefed about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just get together. I mean, that's the main thing that's going on right now. Just speak with one voice where it's like, oh, we didn't know. Oh, no, I knew about it. I knew about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's almost worse. That's almost worse when there's conflicting stories coming out.
Yep. A little bit of pass the buck, I guess we'll say. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to round number four, where we have Major General Malcolm Frost come on the show. I have to admit, when we get certain interview invites where it's like, oh, we're going to talk about science, I'm like, oh, God, I don't know if this is going to be good or not. Motherfuck. And that's kind of how I felt going into this one. But I will say, it turned out great. I left the interview motivated, ready to go, ready to have people who are smart in charge of different things like how to build the next generation of warrior during COVID-19. Here's Major General Malcolm Frost, who's telling us how to do just that. Now it's 0:30. I'm privileged to have Major General Malcolm Frost on the show. The Major General is kind enough. He's still serving, which we normally have to get permission from the PA. No, you're not? You're done?
No. I retired last year.
The sheet that I got said that you're still on active duty. I was like, well, we normally have to go through PAO to make sure. I was like, but he's a Major General. I guess he could do what the fuck he wants to. So
cleared hot.
All right, good. So you spent your entire career, very distinguished career. Was that the 82nd Airborne? You did multiple combat tours, have a lot of decorations, and you stuck around the Army after you got out. I imagine because your last post led you to a passion project of kind of where you're at now. Would that be right?
Yeah. So, I mean, 31 years in the United States Army, career infantryman, served all over the world, as you said, operational deployments, combat, et cetera. And, you know, my last couple of jobs have kind of taken me to where I am in, I say retirement, it's not really retirement, transition into a new life, right? And the last couple of jobs, I was the director of public affairs for the Army. After that, all initial entry training. And that's really, if you think about it, boot camp, Paris Island, Fort Jackson, you know, transforming 125,000 young Americans, recruits into 10 weeks into, you know, soldiers who are disciplined, value-based, acculturated and fit and ready to fight, right?
And they'll go and know how to choke their buddy out when they get home from boot camp.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You got to have a little bit of close combat, little CQB. You know, but one of the big things I did in the last job was it was an additional duty, if you can believe it. I was in charge of holistic health and fitness for the Army and rolling out the new Army fitness test, first one in four decades. And being a guy who grew up playing sports and loving athletics and being a physical fitness guy, it was right down my lane. And so I really, really enjoyed that. That was kind of the passion. I continue that as one of the things I do now that I'm in my kind of second life.
And as somebody who spent a lot of time, not just in the Army, but commanding soldiers, having to adapt on the fly is something that you were used to. Like, that's just what you have to do when you're in the military. With coronavirus and all the different changes going on, one of those big changes happens at boot camp right away. And it feels like they get the changes before the rest of big Army does. How in charge of that program do you look at what's going on and say, we have to adapt this, this, and this while new information is still being gathered?
I will tell you, that's exactly right. I mean, because the train goes moving along. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like building or fixing an airplane in flight. So I know that the guy's initial entry training, you know, it's a petri dish as it is. Everyone's close in tight, you know, disease and, you know, cough on each other, everything, you know, it's very easy for diseases to spread. And so they had to go through a ton of protocols and get it right. They still had a couple of outbreaks. Good thing is most folks were asymptomatic, but that's a tightly grouped environment. You know, but as the chief of staff of the Army says right now, he says, hey, you know, we can't telecommute to combat. You have got to have trained soldiers to be able to support and defend the nation. So the pipeline has to continue.
And with that pipeline, is there any danger if things continue right now, in your opinion, where they would have to do a stop loss? Because the numbers going into, I know the numbers going into Marine Corps recruit training are much lower than typical, because you can't have, during the summertime, you're not going to have 90 recruits in the same squad bed.
Yeah, that's a good question. I will tell you that the old recruiting model of having 1,500 recruiting stations in, you know, all across America and having people come to your door, you know, that's kind of going by the wayside. That's why I think you see in the Army, they're really getting after things like putting together a fitness team, putting together an esports team, mm-hmm. looking at doing mobile recruiting with everything that you need in your car so you can go out to where, you know, young Americans are. It's a challenge, you know, there for them to meet their mission. I don't think they're at the point where they're looking at stop loss, but they definitely are challenged to meet the mission in this environment. And they've got to just think outside the box. As you said, be agile. You know, and you got to be able to look at a recruit. Are they medically fit? You know, can they pass their ASVAB, their mental test? Oh, by the way, are they physically fit?
And did they have coronavirus ever?
Yeah. Well, do they have coronavirus? Are they asymptomatic? You know, but I think we're going to get through this, right? I mean, I think as a nation, you know, once we, I call it the, you know, we're in the new abnormal, right? Which is the point of now, but between until the point where we get to a vaccine or antibodies that are in mass across the nation. And hopefully, you know, hopefully that's in the next 6 months or so. We'll see.
And when you're looking at these different qualifications, because the Army's still got to be ready. I mean, the troops have still got to be ready to defend the nation at a drop of a hat. But now you don't have those same measures of testing. For somebody in your job and position, what is your advice to commanders on the field as far as maintaining a level of fitness, but not having that qualifier as the level of fitness?
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's first off, this is one of the beauties of the new Army Combat Fitness test the Army put out. You know, we used to have the test where it was just three events, 2 minutes push-ups, 2 minutes sit-ups, 2 mile run, didn't need any equipment. Now the new test is six events and mm-hmm. you need equipment. We have lanes of equipment you have to set up, which means people are touching things. And that's, you know, and so to suspend the test or to not take the test on that equipment for in the interim, I think is probably a wise decision until you can put in the protocols necessary.
Which got to kill you guys with the amount of money that you spent like to get it going.
Let's put that into perspective, right? So what is the cost of fitness? I mean, that's a great point. So the Army spent somewhere on the order of around $80 million for 39,000 lanes of equipment. So every soldier in the Army could take this test two times a year.
Oh, that's like one wing. That's like one wing on a plane. That's nothing.
So I love it. I love the way you're thinking. $80 million, 1.1 million soldiers. That's $80 a soldier.
Yeah, that's nothing.
That's a pair of sneakers, man.
You can't get them a gold membership for that.
That's exactly. That's a pair of sneakers. And so compared to the $500 million we're spending a year in musculoskeletal injuries and problems, 1.9 billion in unready soldiers that can't deploy, 1.6 billion in medical costs. This is a drop in the bucket. We have to invest in readiness through physical fitness now. We've been neglecting it for 30, 35 years. We're finally getting on the train and doing this right so we can reduce injury, prevent injuries, make soldiers more ready. And at the end, oh, by the way, when you get to me, somebody who had 9 surgeries, if I'd have done physical fitness right, and I'm a fitness guy, I probably would have not had the shoulder surgery, the back surgery. You know, and you look at the back end with the VA and disability, I think we'll save ourselves there, much less be combat ready to do our job.
How hard is it for somebody in your position to monitor the old heads? Like like the older staff and COs, the battalion commanders, the regimental commanders and things like that. When you're teaching them a new method of, I remember whenever we went from static stretching to dynamic warmups.
Yeah.
The master guns and the sergeant majors, they weren't hearing that shit. They were not about it at all.
Yeah. So you have your antibodies, right? But you're always going to have your antibodies. I will tell you that those that are physically fit or into fitness or in the jobs where you have to be physically fit, they get it, whether they're general officers, sergeants, majors, colonels, you know, it doesn't matter. You see them, they get it and they understand it. You do have a group out there, though, who look at this through the lens of themselves and their inability to do things. Well, the fact that shines weaknesses on your physical, on what is physically weak with you. It did for me. It humbled me. You know, I'm a guy who maxed the PT test easily.
Right.
But now I've got a deadlift, you know, and now I got to, you know, do this sprint drag carry. I got to do things that I wasn't used to doing. I had to change my workout routine. So you do have those antibodies, and there's a fear that we're going to use this test to push you out. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. I mean, there's like a 2-year, I think they announced until 2022, you can get used to and understand this test. But this is what I tell folks is, listen, it's not about you. It's about 20 or 30 years from now. It's about that kid that's coming in to become a soldier, a Marine, an airman, a sailor at boot camp, at basic, and how their career is going to look 20, 30 years down the road. And you know, and I'll tell you, there is a lot of science and technology behind not just ensuring that we are better prepared physically for the test, but also ensuring that recruits that come in are more, you know, we can look at folks and understand your weaknesses and prevent injury. There are ways to objectively measure and look at somebody very quickly at speed and scale to do that. I mean, and one of the companies that you know, that I work with on the outside now, Sparta Science, that's exactly what they do. I mean, they're unbelievable. And, you know, and if you think about it, the bottom line is, and I talked about the problem set, but if you can diagnose very quickly, you know, in Sparta, what they do is they look at through three tests, jumping, balancing, and planking, and they look at your ability to load, explode, and then drive, you know, through a movement cycle, and they can scan you so quickly and very easily find out where your weaknesses are. Do you have a low back or core risk? Are your ankle or knees or your elbows at risk? And then put together a program based on data through machine learning. And doing that at speed and scale and understanding where you are as a soldier and allowing you to understand what your fitness regimen needs to be on because you have this Sparta score and have an objectively measured ability to look at where your problem sets are and prevent injury, we'll be able to save that money I talked about up front and make them more ready in the long run. And so I think that's what's kind of exciting about being able to take advantage of technology as we're trying to get into this new holistic health and fitness, you know, better ready, better prepared force of the future.
And I think you're spot on there with some of the technology that has changed. I mean, what I remember whenever I first joined, and I'm sure you do as well, the coaching aspect of getting better physically fit was essentially screaming at you to do what you were doing, just do it harder. Like that was the coaching. And when I went to Sergeant's Corps Staff Academy, there somebody told me about a store called Virginia Runs or something like that, yeah, where you actually have a coach somebody that's trained outside. They watch you put on a different pair of shoes. They figure out what shoes for your gait are appropriate that you should be running. And I dropped minutes off of my 3-mile time just from changing shoes based on how I ran.
Well, exactly. And so you said it. So who was the one that used to put together the PT programs? It was the commander. The mm-hmm. commander decided what PT was. And what did a commander decide for PT? What they liked and were good at. And so guess what? I'm here to tell all commanders out there, you don't know fitness. You suck. So you need to go to guys that are experts. And that's why the Army is going this direction where they are actually putting down into units at the brigade level, athletic trainers, strength and conditioning coaches, physical therapists, registered dietitians, and they're putting in behavior and occupational therapists. They're putting them down because you have those experts, just like you talked about, that can tell you and put together a program for you, understand who you are individually, what your mission is, and what the team and the unit needs for their mission, and put together holistic programs to get people more fit. And then they need to be armed with the right technology and with the right, you know, from a medical and sports perspective, again, back to that objective analysis, the ability to measure and arm them to be able to quickly scan soldiers. Because it's not like you can just go to, you know, NFL Combine, mm-hmm. where in 3 or 4 days, you know, which is great. I'm not poo-pooing that. But we don't have the time. I mean, we have to take a PT test, 130 folks in 2 hours with six lanes, 1.1 million people. You have to have something that can do this at speed and at scale. And again, that's, you know, and not to harp on it, but this is why I'm excited about things like about what Sparta Science does, because, you know, that's the readiness multiplier that uniquely provides objective assessments by measuring fitness level, injury risk, and rehabilitation success at speed and scale for large organizations. And so that's why this is such an exciting field and why I'm so involved with it now that I'm on the back end and retired.
Do you think this will change the ideal body type of what a soldier looks like? Like, I know for us, for boards, whenever you look at a Marine, they typically wanted somebody who was 5'11 to 6'1, that was probably 175 pounds, 180 pounds, that could do 20 pull-ups, that could go out there and run 3 miles in 18 minutes. That was the ideal Marine. When the CFT came about, the folks who were crushing the 300 on the CFT struggled with the bot, with picking up somebody and dragging them and having multiple ammo cans and things like that. And you started to see, well, maybe this really skinny guy isn't the best one. Maybe we need to go with this stockier dude who can carry somebody.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. When I was a company commander in Italy in 1995, I had my radio telephone operator, Specialist Reed, great kid. But he was just a big dude, man. He was always failing the 2 minute, you know, the two mile run and just couldn't get it, didn't have that kind of endurance to pass a 2 mile run. Every other one he'd pass, he was barely making it through. But I'll tell you what, in combat, in an operational setting, I wanted that guy because mm-hmm. you know what? He could carry the radio, me and my rucksack, and he could hump us if I got wounded. Yeah. So it's exactly right. It's about understanding the tasks that soldiers, Marines have to do in combat and regressing back the physical components of fitness that are necessary to execute those tasks. That's what the new fitness test in the Army is and what the Holistic Health and Fitness Program is and why you need to objectively assess those things and measure them properly, because I don't need gazelles. I don't want a gazelle. I don't care if you can run 2 miles in 12 minutes with nothing on. That does me no good in combat. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know the deal. It can be 50 seconds, 5 minutes, or 50 minutes can be the most important in your life. And if you can't shoot, move, and communicate, and move under fire, move under weight, and be able to drag a casualty 15 meters, that 50 seconds could be your life and their life. And that can happen in an instant when you're hit with an IED. So you got to be rounded fitness in a rounded sense.
Do you think that this change is primarily taking spots because people who rose to your level in the military, major generals, even all the way up to 4 stars, have been around and they started the war on terror in battalion level leadership positions, or maybe even below that in company level leadership at times, where they've seen the benefits, they've been through 20 years of combat now, and they know what a soldier, sailor, airman, or Marine should be able to do and should be able to function and what just looks good on paper?
I think there's three reasons for it. The number one reason is the folks that have come up to my level, we're Gen Xers, right? I think the boomer generation, and, you know, no offense to them, and this isn't them, all of them, but some of them in general.
Oh, yeah, we love the shit on the boomers. Let's go.
Well, you know, but they had their way of doing things, and they thought right. that was the way it was supposed to be done. You know, Gen X, we came up, and so if you think about it, generationally, we came up in a more sports fitness-oriented environment. But number two, you're exactly right. I was a brigade operations officer. I was a squadron commander in combat for 15 months. And I was a brigade level commander for combat in 12 months. And that was on the ground every single day, you know, rolling out the gate 13,000 miles and humping in Afghanistan and then humping again in Iraq. And so you understand the importance of fitness. You saw it. And then generationally, I think we were attuned to it. And then here's the other thing that happened is we started to break soldiers and Marines. Medical injuries, musculoskeletal problems, not being able to handle load. And we started to decrease the readiness of the force and had huge injury rates. And so I think that was a wake-up call. That was the wake-up call we needed at the highest levels in the Pentagon, was that, hey, if you have 17% of the force that can't deploy, can't play on the field, I mean, really? You know, that's like putting a football team out there and throwing, you know, 8 guys and saying, go against the Patriots who have 11, mm-hmm. right? You can't do that. And so we had to do something to fix this in the long run. Because we were just breaking off kids, you know, soldier, you know, not just kids, old guys like me. And we weren't ready. And it's all about readiness to do your job. You have to be able to do your job, and that's support and defend this nation in the crucible of ground combat sometimes.
your biggest piece of advice before we let you go to somebody that's in a platoon level leadership, how to get their folks as ready as they possibly can be while they're doing coronavirus and they're having social distancing. If you could talk to a platoon level leader, because that's mostly who listens to our show, what would your advice to them be to make sure that their soldiers or whoever are ready to go?
Yeah. So first and foremost, and I, you know, I still have my one slide that I talk about to lieutenants in combat, one slide of what to do. The first thing you do is it's physical fitness. Every other part of readiness comes from being physically fit. If you're not physically fit, you're not going to be able to shoot well. If you're not physically fit, you're not going to be able to treat somebody under duress or fire. It's all about physical fitness. And I'll tell you, although we have the equipment, there are ways to do individually where you just have your body. You don't need equipment. So you can do this in a corona environment. Use your imagination. But physical fitness is where leadership starts. It's where teamwork starts. It's where esprit is and camaraderie is. To me, that is the core of who we are from a readiness perspective. If you're physically ready, then you're going to be ready to do your job.
I bet there was people who checked into your unit who hated you, sir. When your first thing is fitness, and that's what your commander says, you're like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, so, well, there's a term out there, you know, and it was a fitness perspective, and it was also, if you didn't do your job right perspective, it was called getting frosted.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. You don't seem like you're fucking around too much. We appreciate you taking the time to join us, sir. And thanks for everything you're doing to try to keep the Army as ready as they possibly can be.
Hey, thanks, Chaps. Thanks for your service as well. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell you, I've been out of the Marine Corps for a while. Making a Major General laugh, still, that makes my day.
So I was actually going to say, it's like, I mean, how often, maybe Chaps, you did just because of the nature of your work, but I mean, how often did either or all three of you come across general level officers?
Never. I mean, a few times, like for change of command stuff, but like just talk, even Brigadier General. I mean, because in Okinawa, that was the commander of U.S. Forces Japan, like was a Brigadier General. So there might have been two on base at any given point. So just the odds of running into them. I think the only time I ever saw ours was the first woman who was ever promoted to Brigadier General that was an MP. And she pinned my Purple Heart. I got pinned Purple Heart, a name with a V, and promoted to Sergeant all on the same day. And she was there for that. And that was the only time I think I ever saw her.
Yeah. I was a Lieutenant Colonel on my first deployment. I was around 3.6 and 2.9s, like top leader the whole time, but they weren't general yet. So they were, it's still fucking nerve wracking though. I'll say that much.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I had a conversation one time with a 3-star while I was in a towel. Like, I don't know. You just have different experiences.
I had a conversation with a 3-star.
No, actually, do you guys remember last year when we were in Charlotte and we were driving along at the NASCAR race and we were in our golf cart, and then I just happened to see retired Lieutenant General Bill Lennox, who was the superintendent when I was at school, and I just popped out and like ran over to him, like gave him a big hug.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. It's just that was nice to see him. Anyway.
Cool story, Cons. Let's move on to round number 5. What happened there? Tell us a little bit about your interview, Kate.
Yeah, so we interviewed Chief Warrant Officer Keith Fricke, who was our producer and social media guy, Kyle's, I guess, was he OIC is what you would call him, Kyle?
He was.
Yeah, over in Afghanistan. And so it was actually a really interesting conversation. You'll hear it in a second here. But even beforehand, before the interview, Kyle and I were talking, and he's like, you know, hindsight 2020, there were things that I'm looking forward to talking to him about and kind of apologizing for at certain points, because, you know, times have changed and perspectives have changed. So it was interesting to hear you two talk too, Kyle.
Yeah, it was great to have him on. I'm really glad he agreed to do the interview and share so much of his story with us. And before we get going into it, I'll give a little more background. In 2011 is when I met him. I was a corporal and he was a brand new warrant officer. And at the time, he wasn't out yet, and he goes into that in the interview. But we had sent him a list of questions and things, you know, to be prepared to answer and things we might cover. And he replied to them all, and I was reading through them before the interview a couple days ago. And it was really hard to read because a lot of the things that he was writing about that weren't great memories for him, I was a part of it. I was a part of a lot of horrible things in his life that made him feel bad and made him feel like he didn't belong. And even though that was never, ever my intention to make him feel that way, the result was the same. And so it was nice. I'm really happy I was able to apologize to him before the interview. And he was very gracious and understanding, even though he didn't need to be. But it was just hard to confront that. And the interview itself, really great. He shares a huge, 23 years of experience. That's a lot of time in the Marine Corps. And he was in, of course, pre-repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and post. So his experiences run the gamut. And I hope that everyone is able to learn as much from it as I was, even as hard as it was at times, to hear him. But without further ado, it is Chief Warrant Officer 4, Keith Fricke.
We are joined today by Chief Warrant Officer 4, Keith Fricke. And not only is, I believe, this is the first Chief Warrant Officer 4 we've ever had in the show. I feel like the elusive Chief Warrant Officer, let alone a 4. I mean, so, and he is actually, you were the direct OIC of Kyle, our producer here at one point. You knew him as a corporal. It's very cool to have somebody who was in charge of one of our ZBT people here on the show. And so we're here, it's Pride Month. And we are having different people. We put the call out, having people come on the show and tell us their stories and what their experience has been. And we just had somebody on the other week who joined later after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was already repealed. Still didn't feel comfortable enough to come out until just last year. But you joined before it was repealed, September 20th, 2011. And I just kind of, I hope you don't mind, just kind of want to jump right into it.
Yeah, of course.
What year did you join, and did you have any reservations joining, knowing that?
I joined in March of 1997, and I was a very sarcastic kid. I also had trouble getting up on time, and I definitely had a problem with authority. So my mom was a little concerned and very surprised that I'd picked the military. But I don't know. I mean, I tried it after the fact, but I just kind of felt the calling to participate in that. And the funny thing is, about 3 years before, I think I was about 15, I came out to my mother, and my mother, also being a lesbian, cried, said that she wished I wasn't because it's not an easy life to lead. But when I was joining, when I was doing all the paperwork to join, that never actually came up. She wasn't worried about that. And I hate to appropriate the word privilege into a different context, but and maybe we'll get to it later, but I found that more masculine gay men and more feminine females have an easier time in the military than the opposite, because whether you want to call it heteronormativity or just ignorance of onlookers that don't understand, they expect that every gay man is Jack from Will and Grace or Jonathan from Queer Eye. Like, there's a little more duality than that, in my opinion. So anyway, rabbit hole aside, my mother never really worried about that, and initially speaking, I didn't worry about it either, because at the time, I hadn't even been comfortable enough to tell more than probably 4 people, so I just assumed that I would stay under the radar.
And then, was there any point that you slowly became, because you said at first it wasn't really an issue, but when did it start to become something that, like, oh shit, was it you seeing how other people were getting treated, or just things you had been hearing, like the scuttlebutt, or you just knew you were in a unit where you knew you couldn't?
Well, I mean, there's kind of a lot in that one, but the very first experience that I can remember was in the schoolhouse as a PFC, and my roommate, you know, some people luck out with barracks roommates. I always had the really frumpy, goofy ones, but
same.
The exception being that guy. My roommate at the time was so hot, and he used to walk around in his tidy whities in the barracks room, and I just feel like, dude, could you put some clothes on? And straight Marines being what they are, he would like come up and like wave his junk in my face and just like, what are you doing? But fast forward a little bit, I'm sure he'll never listen to this podcast because I don't think he's a social media guy, but the last night before we graduated and left, looking back on it now, he was absolutely giving me a green light to do something about it, but I was so scared that he was messing with me, that, you know, we went through the schoolhouse together, so we knew all of the same people. And if I misread that cue, you know, I'm gone. Like 1997, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell wasn't even a pipe dream yet. Like it just was what it was. But that was the first time I remember being uncomfortable. And then moving forward some, I was a corporal at Miramar, and there was this guy that I always found attractive, and he would hit on me at bars or at friends' parties and stuff. But I remember just never getting a good feeling about him for whatever reason. So I never did anything. Well, fast forward a little bit. He used to invite people over to his room at Miramar and have sex with them and stuff. Well, unbeknownst to all of those dudes, he was keeping a diary. I have no idea why. I never asked the guy because he immediately went to the brig and disappeared. But he kept a diary of their names, their phone numbers, what kind of car they drove, anything he knew about them, what they did sexually and stuff. Well, however it happened, NCIS got a hold of him. And whether he had that diary as leverage or they found it, I can remember off the top of my head 10 guys at least that got discharged all because of that. And that's not proof, but back then they didn't need proof.
It's so crazy because, I mean, obviously that's something I never had to worry about. And I was also in after that was repealed. Well, actually, I'm thinking in my head, I'm looking at the date, September 20th, 2011. And I was like, oh, that was still a thing when I was in. I got in 2008. Like, I almost couldn't believe that that was still a thing when I was in. And I guess it wasn't on my mind because I, again, like you talk about privilege. I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't worry about it. I wasn't thinking about anybody else's troubles really, or anything else my fellow service members were dealing with. Head up my own ass kind of lady. But I mean, I just look at the date, like it's still shocking to me. I'm like, oh my God, you were in when that was still a thing. Holy shit. And I can't imagine, like I served with somebody, well, I went to Fordham with somebody afterwards and I was on the GI Bill. He was still trying to fight. He had been kicked out from the Navy under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And it's like, the feeling of that. So it has to be a really scary thing. And at the time too, was there people though that you could confide in? Were there certain units that were like, don't worry about it, you're cool? Like, was there anything like that? Or it was still like Minesweeper, you just had to be crazy careful?
I mean, I can't speak obviously on every organization or anything. I mean, only the ones I was part of or kind of second or third generation hearsay, but definitely heard that there were some, like I had friends in recon or MARSOC units. And at that point, the frivolous stuff kind of goes to the side and you just get to know each other as human souls, as opposed to whatever proclivities, religion, race, background, where you grew up, all that stuff. I mean, we all know that, but I found also that a lot of air wings were a little more laid back. But again, referencing back to what I was talking about, I know plenty of guys, myself included, that if they have a little more of a masculine side to them, or females that have a little more of a feminine side, they could kind of skirt under the radar. But I can think of several friends that were either effeminate men or masculine women that, even though they were straight, they got subject to belittlement, harassment. In fact, there was a story of a guy, he was a pretty effeminate guy, but he was also admittedly straight, and he got so much grief over it time and time and time again that the command finally put him up on charges of being gay, and he just didn't fight it because he's like, well, at least I can not have to deal with this anymore. And I mean, I haven't talked to him in a few years, but last I knew, he, his wife and their three children live happily in New Hampshire. And he has I haven't just applied to a whole lot of civilian jobs, but I know that many of them say, like, have you ever served in the military? Were you ever dishonorably discharged or whatever? Now he has to say that. He probably had to have that awkward conversation with his girlfriend or fiance. Mm-hmm. And how many layers of influence is this going to have on him? I mean, now people can kind of retroactively get that discharge repealed. I don't know if that was a pun in terms or whatever, but they can get it rescinded and get their honorable discharge back. But it was never right for anybody, but it just seems all the more sad for a straight guy to have been kicked out for Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not funny, like, by any means, but no, I see. It's like a witch hunt of sorts, and like hundreds of thousands of lives are affected by this awful, awful thing. Was there, like, we talk about the Lance Corporal Underground, where we're all connected with a little coconut wireless kind of thing. Like, was there though, like an underground network? Was there like camaraderie and like, I know that this person, we can talk, we're safe. Like, was there anything like that?
There absolutely was, or at least in my experience, there was. Again, at the schoolhouse, I made a friend over, I'm about to date myself even more here, but I made a friend over AOL IM from an AOL chat room. Yeah. And he lived in like Huntington Beach or something. It was really, really cool. And that, along with a few other experiences, was when I stopped using my real name. I picked a nickname and I would introduce myself that way because that guy, meeting well, told another student in a whole nother company, like, hey, reach out to this guy and maybe y'all can like be friends or just have somebody else to talk to about what challenges we face on a daily basis. And Kyle will remember this, but there's a huge quad in the center of our barracks, and standing with my entire class, this random kid that none of us knew walked up and was like, hey, you're Keith Ricky. I was like, yeah. And he's like, I know Chris. And I was like, okay, good for you. And it just, not only was it an awkward intro and then we stepped off to the side, then I had to go back to all my classmates, like, what did that guy want? Who was he? And it just, that was
right.
One of the first. And then another, I used to, back when I was single, there was a certain website that I don't want to say because it was super tragic, but there was a website for gay networking, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I met this guy on my base and we were talking and stuff. And I mean, he seemed nice enough. Like it was not a romantic thing. It was just friendly talking. Well, one specific day he had been messaging me and I wasn't answering fast enough. You know, heaven forbid I was in a meeting, but mm-hmm. I wasn't answering fast enough for him. So he takes it upon himself to recognize my face from the app, to then connect that to MySpace through mutual friends, see my full name on there. My name's kind of unique. So then he goes to the global address list to look up my phone number at work and calls me at the office.
Mother of God. Like, hey, only red flags, Batman.
Yeah, he was like, hey, this is screen name, whatever the fuck. Like, you want to go to lunch? And I blew up on the guy. Thankfully and coincidentally, when I'm screaming at this person over the phone, the only other person in the office was my lesbian master sergeant. So
yeah.
I was able to actually be honest with her, but had anybody else been in the room, I don't know how that conversation would have gone. And even more so, I don't know what spillover effects it might've had, because that was in probably 2002 and I was clearly talking to a guy.
It's a shame you guys didn't stick it out because he seems really normal and awesome. I think you guys would have had a healthy relationship. That would have been totally. Just fine. And again, talk about what did it feel like the day that it was finally repealed? Was it like, I could be myself now? Or was it still, you know, that's great, but the attitudes still haven't changed. And so I still don't feel comfortable. Was there ever a point where that tide shifted?
For me personally, yes, there was a point that it shifted, but that was several years later. And I mean, I've got other stories of like kind of the justification or the amplification of my reasoning, but part of me personally, I never wanted to come out until I had someone to come out for. Because mm-hmm. being a single gay man can seem to some as the potential of being more, I hate to use the word predatory, but if you're single, you might be looking for something at work, as opposed to if you're in a relationship. I won't say that's everybody's experience, but more to the point though, when the repeal happened, I was actually at the basic school going through as a brand new warrant officer, and we all got called, my class of 280 or whatever it was, we got called to the auditorium for the TBS commanding officer to give us an address on the message and its implication on us, not only as individual Marines, but as future platoon commanders, and how we need to, what's that word? The unity of command, I think it is. Like mm-hmm. if the CO says something, you can't go in front of your Marines and be like, I think this is bullshit, but the boss said it, so we got to do it. Like,
right.
But that is exactly what he did. He got up there. He was so visibly uncomfortable that the tone of his voice and his body language was just palpable with how much he disagreed. Nowhere in whatever incoherent rambling he gave did he say the words gay, lesbian, same sex. Like, it was just, you know, this is what it is now. You're platoon commander, so you just need to deal with it. And it just was so awkward. And yeah. I actually did, through, you know, irrelevant ways, like I networked with people and I found three other foreign officers in my class that were all lesbians. And we'd kind of hang out and just talk about, like, what the hell was that? But
right. What an asshole. Yeah, we award him no points and may God have mercy on his soul. Nothing he said there made any sense. Yeah, what a total dickhead. But, I mean, how do you feel like it is now? Like, do you think, because it was so great talking in the last interview with Sergeant Bertolani and how he says, for me, I've never been happier in my life. I feel like this weight has been lifted off me. I don't have to hide anymore. Yeah. I mean, do you think it's for most that way now? Because he even said, like, that's just my experience and it's different across the board everywhere you go. But
yeah. Unfortunately, no. I mean, it's heartwarming, I guess, for lack of a better term. It's heartwarming to hear that. And with all the humility I can, like, I do realize the part that I played in, like, kind of paving that road, even from an individual unit perspective, the amount of straight guys that have come up to me, whether social media or in person, and said, like, not only did I appreciate you as a leader and a person, but, like, you literally helped me individually change my perspective on something. Because, like I said earlier, some people think that Jack from Will and Grace and Jonathan from Queer Eye, while both amazing human beings, that's what gay is. And it never, hell, I remember another time, several units later, this was like 4 years ago, we got a new first sergeant who was, you know, 0369 infantry his whole career. And he came to my unit, a comm unit, as his first place. And as people are oft to do, they love to share secrets that have nothing to do with them. So somebody told him that I was gay and he, like, combatively denied it. Like, no way. No, he's not. And he ended up coming up to me later and he was like, I heard this thing and it's probably fucked up. And, like, I don't want to offend you if it is true, but, like, I heard this thing. Are you gay? And I was like, yes. And it just, like, floored him. And we ended up having, like, a really constructive conversation about his presumptions and just what he assumes. And if statistically speaking, of the people that have come out, knowing many haven't, if 10% of the human population is LGBTQ+, how many Marines do you think in our company of 400 could really use your advocacy and support? And it just kind of floored him. He's like, wow, that's a great point.
Yeah. Now, I've found a lot of times for me, I learn most by the things that I don't like and what I don't want. And I see definitely, like, looking at bad leadership teaches you a lot about good leadership, yeah. You know, seeing those experiences and having experienced weak leadership on these terms yourself, has that affected how you lead now? And do you keep that in mind with your own troops? And are there certain ways that you've stepped up now knowing what you went through to help other people out?
Yes. Not only from the LGBTQ perspective, I've often found that I'm at least the only one, or excuse me, I'm at least the only officer, if not the only out person in my command at the time. That's, although I may resent it sometimes, and I'll probably talk on that a little bit, but sometimes you just want to be a Marine. Like, mm-hmm. HRC is Human Rights Campaign. I don't always want to, at every moment of my professional life, wave the HRC flag in my workplace. Sometimes I just want to be a Marine. I've got 18 things to do, but if something happens, yes, I feel an obligation to talk on it. For instance, at my last command, it was training command. I was at the schoolhouse again, and the message came out from training command to all the 19 formal learning centers in the Marine Corps, like, hey, we are going to have our first openly transgender service members coming through your schoolhouse. And when the meeting of 15, 20, whatever Marine staff, POs and officers it was, got to that point, the room just exploded into mass pandemonium. Like, where are they going to live? Where are they going to pee? Like, all this stuff. And again, I have to pick up the mantle of my community, of which I'm not even that specific mm-hmm. demographic. I'm a cisgender guy. Like, what do I know about being transgender? But through empathy and compassion, I can say something. And the something I said was, look on MOL. If it says F, they go in a female barracks room. Shut the fuck up. Like, this is not a consideration. But anyway, more to your point, yes, like, I think I became a more fierce advocate of any kind of marginalized person, whether it's women in the Marine Corps. I've seen some horrible things done to women in the Marine Corps, or persons of color, or LGBTQ people. It just, it when all you want is to be treated just like the person right next to you, and you're not, for whatever nonsense reason, it's so frustrating. But all that said, yes, I think it did. How do I say this without being arrogant? I think it did mold me into a certain kind of leader.
Be arrogant. Let it out. Yeah. Come on.
I'm surprised it hasn't been on a plaque yet, because I say this all the time. Like, I'm not Chesty Puller incarnate, but it doesn't take very much to be a good person. And it really doesn't take very much to be a good leader. Like, all you have to do is care about your people. And, you know, we talk about mission accomplishment and troop welfare, flip them around. Because in an all-volunteer service, you want to accomplish the mission anyway. That's why you join. So if you take care of your people, whatever that is, going through a divorce, a death in the family, like what, it, or being LGBTQ or being Black.
I think too, good leaders realize that it's discrimination's a national security issue. Really, you're weakening the force in many ways when you're discriminating against, like you said, 10% of the troops, at least LGBTQ, so many different backgrounds and whatever. And it's definitely, but I do hope that leadership is changing. I'm grateful. And you're right. Like, because you are maybe one of the only gay men in your unit, everybody comes to you. Well, what do we do? What do we, or this and that. And I'm sure that gets annoying, because it should be something everybody's learning and that everybody can say, here's the right thing. You know, it's one of those things, but I hope more and more that you're seeing more of that. And I hope that you've been seeing a trend in the right direction, however painfully slow it might be going. But on a different note, can you just tell us, I just always like to get like a couple wacky things. I don't want to get too personal, but favorite MRE. I'm going to judge. If you say the wrong thing, I'm going to judge.
Well, being my rank and all, I haven't eaten one in quite a while.
That's a sign. Oh, okay. Mr. Fancy, off of the bat.
Hey, I'm just going to say MREs. I'm a little bougie, but no. Actually, it's funny. I didn't even think of this. With all the quarantine stuff, I work at a reserve unit as part of the active duty staff. And part of our contingency, if you will, was we gave, the command gave two boxes of MREs to every member, like as if that's going to keep you from starving or something. But my husband and I joked through the years, like, you can't be a real dependent if you haven't had an MRE. So one day for lunch, we broke them out on the counter, and I did get to pick, I don't know if it's my favorite, but one of my favorites was that beef brisket one.
Oh, yeah. The beef stew and the beef. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Or the tuna one. Like, nobody ever liked the tuna one, but like with that flatbread pita thing or whatever, like it wasn't my favorite, but usually if people don't take it, I was like, well, at least it's edible.
Good snacks in it. At least you didn't say omelet. That's the test. If you say omelet, you fail automatically.
I've actually never had the omelet because I've always heard it sucks.
Yeah, don't do it. One of the coolest things we had here are the guy who started the company that we work at. He's kind of famous for doing these pizza reviews all the time. And we had Medal of Honor recipient Kyle Carpenter come into the office. And so his pizza, he hits up every pizza spot in New York City is his thing. He's making his way to every pizza joint. Well, so for this one, he and Kyle Carpenter did the MRE pizza. So they, but our boss didn't know how to open the package. He didn't even know how to get to the pizza in the first place. It was like a whole big thing. But yes, all right, I'll accept the brisket answer. And finally, is there anything that we didn't ask you that, you know what, I think this is important to say or get out there about anything, really?
Back to one of the, like one of the stories that kind of, I don't know, paved the way for my own anxiety about coming out. I had a good friend of mine, and to speak on a unit that was accepting in 2004, I had a good friend of mine that was part of the 29 Palms band back when bases used to actually have bands instead of regional bands. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was gay, and another guy in his unit was gay as well. Well, the other guy decided to come out to one of their coworkers, and in the process outed my friend as well. So it's one thing to take the initiative and like, hey, I trust you and I want you to know something personal about me, but to out somebody else without their knowledge, that's kind of messed up. But the Marine he told was so at odds with it that she reported them to the chain of command. And at the time the band was like, well, A, your word is not proof, so we can't really do anything with that. And B, like those, both of those Marines are exemplary people and Marines, like
this guy plays the saxophone like a motherfucker. We don't care what he does in his free time. Yeah.
Totally. Well, she was so upset that like 3 months later she went to sergeant's course and told them, which started the NCIS ball rolling. And the guy who originally told her had already been approved a MESAP package, so he got a buy and got to go and be an officer. And as last I know, he's still enjoying the benefits of his long illustrious career. But my buddy got kicked out for that. And it's just they had no proof. They needed no proof. Like, somebody said this, deny it. And I think he didn't deny it, but it just, I don't know. It was just always so sad. Like, you might even have podcasts to talk about this, but how many straight Marines have married some random person off of Craigslist so they can move out of the barracks? But
that's
we were
probably
like constantly
half of our podcasts.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I mean,
I did it, to be honest with you.
I get it.
One of the arguments that you did hear, well, now guys are just going to marry each other to blah, 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 blah. And you're right. Well, guess what? You guys have already been doing that with women out in town or like whoever. So what does it matter to you? Like, and that's not even a thing anyway. Like, come on. So I feel like you're right. People grasp at straws for any little reason they can to cling to not moving on with the times and doing the right thing. So I could definitely see that. And I guess also moral of the story there, don't tell other people's business. Like,
right. Yeah.
No matter
what,
that's your own story to tell and nobody else's. Is there anything else that
Kyle is definitely going to remember this because we were just talking about it.
I know where you're going. I'm ready.
Somebody got a care package that had gay porn mags and the most obnoxious dildo you've probably ever heard of. It was a palm tree.
It wasn't a dildo. It was a palm tree statue.
It was phallic shaped. It was a dildo. So it was a palm tree, and it had a little pineapple at the base, which I think is called a French tickler. I don't mess with those things.
It had two pineapples.
Ah.
Oh, that's what it was. Well, it had a suction cup at the bottom, and I watched as like 5 to 7 straight, mostly married Marines are throwing this dildo at the window, waiting for it to pop facing up. And they were just so excited about it. And I remember sitting back in my little corner like a creeper thinking, you know, is this show free? Like, what the hell is going on? But those magazines were then used. Oh, sorry, what?
No, go ahead, sir. No. I was just going to say, we turned it into like, we had tournaments where we would draw lines on the floor. And it was, passed hours playing that game.
It was an upgrade from throw the rock. It was an upgrade from hit a pole with the rock.
Oh, no.
We threw
rocks, though. We threw some rocks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Say I'm LGBTQ and I'm thinking about joining the military. What would you tell them? Yes, or stay away from it, or what would you say?
I would absolutely say that if someone has the internalized pride and drive to join the military, they should. Much like some things that are going on right now on either side of the proverbial aisle, outliers and antagonists and people that just want to watch the world burn are not the majority. There are so many amazing people in the military or just society in general that, for one, guys like me and so many hundreds of thousands have paved the way so that people could join and be judged by, to borrow Martin Luther King's words, the content of their character. And it takes people joining. Like, I just watched a documentary last night called Trans Military, which is incredible, and I'm not going to take too much from it, but there was a story of Logan Ireland, the Air Force Staff Sergeant, who is incredible, and he's trans. And you just watch his journey and the heartbreaking struggle of what he had to deal with to just be him. When he was in garrison, he couldn't be trans. Like, anybody that wants to Google him. Like, he is a beast with a mustache, huge stature, just a really beefy dude. But the Air Force was telling him, hey, per federal law, you need to put on female blues. Then he deployed, no one cared anymore. And he got to live, 9-10 months as a guy with most people not even knowing. And then he came back and his unit was like, they called him into the CO and he was just, and the whole thing's being recorded. And he was just like, I have no idea what's going to be said. And then he comes back and he's like, my CO brought me in and basically said, like, at this point, you're a huge man with a mustache and muscles and all this stuff. Like, it would be ridiculous. So go get male blues. Damn the law. Like, I'm going to back you 110%. But in the same story, his wife was a trans man. His wife was a trans female in the Army. She had to get her hair cut to look like a man. She had to wear male uniforms. And so, we use the word uniform in 1,000 different contexts, but it wasn't uniform treatment. Like, whether you're a man or a woman, yes, there are standards and stuff, but at least apply them evenly. So it just, again, I can't dictate an hour and a half long documentary, but it was so incredible to watch.
Your message is fucking join. Get in there. Yeah, the more, absolutely, the merrier, the more, the better, the more. And that, again, too, I feel like things are, from where you, and like you said, you paved the way, things are getting better, you know, should be perfect, but things are getting better. And don't be afraid to join if that's what's in your heart. Chief Warrant Officer 4, Keith Fricke, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. And I mean, thanks for, I mean, if Kyle had asked me to come on a podcast and I was in charge of him at one point, I would have just ignored the email. So thanks for coming on despite Kyle, his crazy beard, and and thanks to Kyle. He really put a lot of thought into this and was really glad to have you come on. I know it meant a lot to him too. So thanks to Kyle.
Thank you very much for everything. Yeah. Not just this, but for being the leader you were at the time. I still remember when you got those little chocolates from the Danish side of Leatherneck and brought it all the way down to our shitty little fob, and it had like 3 drops of alcohol in it. That's still one of my most fond memories. So nice. So thank you for that, and thank you for coming on and being so open and sharing a lot more than you had to with us. We all appreciate it very much. So
yes.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to sound trite or whatever, but it's an honor and a privilege not only to serve but to kind of embody those things and slowly but surely nudge, even begrudgingly nudge, the institution to a more inclusive world for all. So I appreciate the opportunity, guys. Thank you.
Thanks to Keith for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Always nice to have different perspectives on the show. Let's go on to the surprise round of the day. Are you guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Any idea of what the surprise round might be?
Something with science. Something with science. Like, how does the moon work?
I think it's more of a game.
It is more of a game. All right. So last week, the last episode when Kate was on, she asked me a little question about the banana wars. And I felt bad because I couldn't give a solid answer about what the banana war was. So now I am prepared to give some information about the banana wars. But we're going to do this in quiz form. Are we ready? We're going to give Kate and Cons the opportunity once again to chime in and have a little bit of ZBT Jeopardy. Here we go. One. Question number one. The Banana Wars begun around 1898 when the United States first established itself as a world power by defeating which nation in a brief but decisive war? Does anybody know without the options?
What is Spain?
Okay. Cons, you have an answer?
Yeah, I was good. I would say Spain too.
Well, you can't do that.
Well, I'm not going to say an answer that I believe to be wrong just to be different.
Well, you got to. You can't.
Mexico. Mexico.
Okay. Mexico, that's a good one. Anybody else have any other answers that they want to throw out there? No.
No.
Hold on.
Yeah, that was the Spanish-American War.
Spanish-American War? Hold on, we'll have to cut this. It wouldn't let me just do one answer at a time. Okay, here we go. Let's start that over again. All right. Next up for round number 6, we're going to continue on with a little bit of ZBT Jeopardy because last week, Kate asked me if I knew anything about the Banana Wars. I answered, no, I did not. So today we're going to learn a little bit about the Banana Wars, and we're going to do that in the form of a little bit of ZBT Jeopardy. Number one, question number one. The Banana Wars began around year 1898 when the United States first established itself as a world power by defeating which nation?
What is Spain?
That is correct. The correct answer there is Spain. The Spanish-American War is interesting for its short duration. John Hay famously called it a splendid little war. What a splendid little war.
Great way to put
that
it.
Was. So the correct answer first goes to Kate. But from henceforth, you have to buzz in, Kate. Please don't forget to be buzzed in. And wait for me to continue reading the entire question before doing so, or you will be disqualified. Okay. Number two. History had shown that the United States concerned itself with the affairs of the Central American and Caribbean politics strongly. For example, James Monroe issued a famous doctrine stating that any effort by a European power to colonize the Americas would be considered an act of aggression by the U.S. Which president issued a namesake corollary to the Monroe Doctrine in 1904.
Corollary.
There we go. Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine in 1904.
Ding. Ding.
Go ahead, Cons.
Oh, shit. I should have let you finish reading the end of that question
because
I think it might have helped. Okay. Was the Truman Doctrine?
No, wasn't the Truman Doctrine.
The Truman Doctrine in 1900? What an idiot.
Well, that's what I said. He said, I wasn't sure if it was.
Yeah, Monroe Doctrine in 1904. It was the adverse of that.
I'm going to go ahead and say, I want to say Jimmy Carter, but I'm not going to. What is James Madison?
No, the correct answer is not James Madison in 1904. The correct answer would be Theodore Roosevelt. The Monroe Doctrine.
Oh, I knew it in my bones.
See, no, I knew it was Teddy Roosevelt back then, but I thought I misheard the question. I'm telling you, really well, throws you off when you can't take
the question.
Question. Don't give him credit. I knew in my
heart. No, because I knew at the end.
This is big time Cons MO. We did this on the other trivia thing we were on. Like, I was going to say after it already has been said, can't do that. There's no take backsies. The Monroe Doctrine was released on December 2nd, 1823 by then President James Monroe. It stated that any act of imperialism by European countries in Latin America would be met by a war of a fledgling nation. In response, the United States pledged not to interfere in European internal affairs. Pretty good. All right, here's the next one. One of the earliest countries occupied in the United States as part of the Banana Wars was Cuba, which had come under American rule after the Treaty of Paris in 1898 and the 1899 Teller Agreement. In 1901, the Platt Amendment was passed, guaranteeing American influence in all spheres of government. It also sold Cuba. It also sold which Cuban geographical landmark to the American government?
Ooh.
What is Guantanamo Bay?
Oh, Cons did not ring in. So
Go fuck yourself.
Kate.
What is Guantanamo Bay, Jack?
Guantanamo Bay. That is correct, Kate. Good job. Rules are important. Spain lost control of Cuba in 1898 after the Spanish-American War, and the island was soon controlled by the United States through the Teller Amendment.
I would just like to know. Okay, sorry. Kate went dark there for a second. She was probably Googling something.
Oh, Kate, were you Googling?
Not realizing that we could tell very much when you go off the screen.
Phone call from Aunt Peggy. That's what that was.
Aunt Peggy, that's fine. All right, here we go.
Susan, who wants to be a millionaire? You can't phone a friend.
2-1, Kate. Question number four. The United States intervention in Panama in 1856 led not only to the Banana Wars, but instead to the Watermelon War, an uprising that granted the Americans several territories along the Panamanian Isthmus. In 1903, Panama was ready for autonomy, and with the help of the United States, declared its separation through a Thousand Day War. Which South American country was Panama a part of at that time?
Ding, ding, ding.
Cons.
What is Brazil?
That is incorrect.
Ding, ding, ding.
Catherine.
What is Belize?
That is also incorrect. The correct answer that we were looking for was Colombia. Colombia.
I was thinking the geography in my head, and actually Brazil's one over, so that makes sense, Colombia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, question number five. Because Central American countries were so heavily dependent on agriculture, a new derogatory term for a struggling independent nation was coined by American short story writer William Sidney Poitier, better known by his pen name, O. Henry. What phrase did Porter use to describe the nation of Honduras when he was hiding there in the late 1800s?
Beep, beep, beep.
Catherine.
The barnyard.
But the barnyard is incorrect. Gods.
Wow.
Remembering that the entire theme of this is the Banana Wars.
What are... the banana eaters. I don't know.
The banana eaters. That is also incorrect. The correct answer that we were looking for was a banana republic. What is a banana republic?
Oh, that makes sense.
Whoa. So this mean term we had turned into a high-end shitty clothing company?
Oh, good point. What? Shitty. My goodness. Well, now we're going to start calling Banana Republic shitty.
I don't like chinos.
What are they to die for?
Says the girl who went to the bodega to buy a shirt and cut it in half and calls that fashion.
That's fair. That's fair. All right, last question. The first and second, no, that one's too fucked up. All right, here we go. Formed in 1899, the company became a major player in the United States Central American politics in the early 1900s, which Kate specializes in, when it monopolized local produce business and gained a stronghold on national economies. Most famously, the American corporation took control of Guatemala's postal service and became the largest employer in Central America. What was this economic giant specializing in tropical fruit, well known in Latin America as El Popo?
You're asking what is the company name?
Yeah.
What's the company?
Oh, God. Beep, 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 beep.
Ding, 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 ding. He's going to give it to Kate because he always does. Go ahead, Kate.
Cons, what do you have?
What is Chiquita Banana?
That is incorrect. Beep, Kate. Beep, beep,
beep, beep. What is Dole?
That is also incorrect, which would be a Hawaiian company. But the correct answer that we're looking for, there was the United Fruit Company. It was formed in 1899, which is lovely. This round of ZBT Jeopardy goes to Kate. Well done, Kate.
Woo! Con's a stupid piece of shit.
Commanding lead on content. Oh, Jeffy.
I was short.
You know what, Kate? You know what, Kate? There are a lot of mean things I could say right now that I'm not going to because I'm better than you.
No, go on. Go on. Let me have it.
I think that was it. Let's move on to safe rounds and alibis. Catherine, we'll start with you.
I posted a photo of myself in a bikini on Twitter yesterday, which I normally never do, but I needed likes really bad. And it was a light bottom, okay? It was light blue, and it was it's a little big on me, so it was saggy. And there's rumors going around that I have a big vagina, and I would like to say it is not true.
That should be the title of the episode, Kate. That's a big vagina.
People are like, Jesus Christ. Like, I was like, wait, what? It's the shadow. It's the title of a big vagina? I'm very upset, so I just wanted everyone to know that. I have a normal size vagina. Thank you.
Cons.
I said a lot in the beginning, but the last thing I will say is yesterday, as we're recording this, it's June 29th. Yesterday was June 28th, the anniversary of Operation Red Wings, which was popularized in the book and subsequent movie Lone Survivor. But if you've never seen Murph the Protector, it's a documentary about Lieutenant Michael Murphy. I would highly recommend that one. It speaks to a lot of his friends and family, and it's very moving, but it just gives a more intimate look about who Lieutenant Michael Murphy was. So Murph the Protector, if you're looking for something to watch.
Kyle?
I just want to say something because now I have a microphone.
Nice.
That's pretty much all I got.
Nice. It sounds great.
You know what? No, actually, you know who Kyle reminds me of? You guys ever seen the movie Major League 2?
Uh-huh.
Of course.
When Bob Uecker will do all the commentary and then he'll say, what do you say, Monty? And Monty doesn't say shit. That's like when we kick it to Kyle and he just doesn't say anything.
Wow, that's very very polite of you, Connor. Thank you.
I'm an officer. I just
yes. He doesn't even use big words. Nope, that's all I got.
I don't have anything, I guess. It's a lovely little week. We're off on radio, which is nice. Having a little bit of a laid back weekend to build my porch. That's about it.
Oh. A lot of
other stuff going on. Uh-huh. 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 It's on the retreat.